Welcome to System Mastery, the critically acclaimed podcast as far as you know. I'm Jeff, and each week my co-host John and I dive deep, deep into the bowels of the American nerd to find crazy RPGs and undigested Cheetos and bring them both to you. This week we bring you Ravenstar, a book where you can play as a human or a humanish bear, and either way, you can join the Cybe Squad and get your Cybe on. Find out way, way more than that on today's System Mastery. Thing reminds me of Second Life. Anyway, that whole art section in the back.
Oh yeah, no, the 3D section that is very much, I found like a 1994 version of Poser.
Well, this is from 1995, so if he found a one-year-old copy of Poser, that would have
That'd be fucking cutting edge.
Very impressive for him, yeah.
Yeah.
Before the new license was even available. But yeah, the whole section back there is like hard calculated to turn you off from understanding what his world is supposed to look like. It's like, the whole concept of this book is, oh, it's a grim and gritty planet where you live in New Chicago and you have to deal with the other races and fight the mafia and
no,
fight
it's,
over
it's
resources.
Very much like, I'm going for like a western gangster cyberpunk
it's kind of
setting.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like gritty space shadowpunk or Shadowrun. But then you look at these 3D images in the back and it's like, what do you got? A mage casts a light spell, and it's a woman from Reboot holding her arms over her head as she stands majestically atop a featureless pink rectangle.
It honestly just looks like he made all of the people out of balloon animals.
Yeah. I mean, most of these are down to, like, a polygon every couple of inches.
It's great. They're just big, smooth blobs.
It's ridiculous. And some of them are very obviously pulled from something else, like the one he has of the eye that's supposed to show how cyber implantation works. You know he got that from a cover of, like, a 1990 copy of Heavy Metal.
Huh.
The whole thing is just ridiculous. It's funny because this is the only section of the book that has any art that looks anything like this. The rest of the art is, like, what did I call it earlier? Toms of Planet Finland?
It is the very gayest of art. That isn't overtly that way. You're just like, if you go through enough of the pictures, you're like, this, you're really obsessed with, like, dudes with their shirts open and kind of thrusting their packages towards the viewer.
There's a lot of unbuckled belts in this book.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of dong flapping about this
No,
way
no,
that.
It's very subtle.
No, it's the beginning. It's an invitation.
No, it's when you'd have that guy, especially the main bear guy.
Yeah,
he's just like,
Porcha.
Hey, looks like you caught me when I was trying to get ready. Looks like I've got my pants already kind of off. Maybe I should go the rest of the way.
Hey, man, I was going to rest for a little while before we got started. Maybe I can rest with you. That guy who I've affectionately dubbed Captain Beef Dip.
Oh, yeah, Captain Beef Dip, the bear man,
yeah.
Is probably the best character ever.
He's certainly a wonderful bear, and we will recreate him later in the character creation section of this. So that's going to be me. We'll have to pick someone for you while we do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I look forward to... He's a Korcha. A Korcha is his species, and his name is Captain Beef Dip.
Oh, Captain Beef Dip.
Captain Beef Dip has been to more than 3 pool parties at Puerto Vallarta. That's what he is. So he's a Korcha, and let's get out of the art and start talking about what we're looking at here. This is a copy of Ravenstar.
And it's the second edition, so you know it's better than the first edition.
Judge your enemies by their will to survive.
Which actually just sounds like something someone would say right as you're playing a fighting game.
Oh,
you're like, I picked Ryu, and then we went to the start screen and was like, judge your enemies by their will to survive!
The Black Barn is filling up!
Fight like Al Jolson!
So, yeah, it absolutely is that. It's definitely one of the... Or something he'd say after he's won. Go home and be a family man. Judge your enemies by their will to survive, says Sagat.
Yeah.
That sounds perfect. You're
absolutely
right.
Yeah, no, that's 100% a fighting game thing.
Yeah, okay. And Ravenstar is a book that's set on a planet called Ravenstar that is really far away, but not in a useful capacity, because I don't think Earth is a big deal in this game anymore.
No, we've gotten to the point where, like, all right, we're exploring the stars. We have somehow found magic. I think probably because we found elves.
Well, I think they found magic on Ravenstar. That was a point in the intro. They were like, oh, we found some runes underground, and then people learned use the runes to discover magic, and now there's a college of magic.
Except it says that, and then it goes on when it's describing the different races to be like, elves have always used magic. And you're like, okay then.
All right. So the basic premise of this game is that it's cyberpunk, kind of cowboyish, near future but far future, on a distant planet, settlers type thing. And the races are the least inspired races I've seen in a while. Like, it's definitely a heartbreaker. It's a space heartbreaker.
Yeah.
The races, and here we go. I'll go through all five of them right now. Humans, elves, dwarves, cat guys, which I believe are called Asad, or Assads.
Yeah, Assads.
Assads. And Korchas, which are the bears. And before you think, oh, it's super furry, the game, just because it's got cats and bears in it, don't worry too much, because this is a little before the modern fury, or furry. It's not before my modern fury. My modern fury is enormous. But no, it's a little before the modern furry, so they look less bear-y and cat-y than you would expect them to.
No, it definitely looks like a big human with animal features rather than a big animal.
Yes, no mascot eyes in this.
No, I mean, it's going to be closer to your cat girl than an actual giant cat.
Absolutely. And
So, they do at least have some ability to get why there's elves and dwarves, which I appreciate. So, elves come from a lower gravity world, so they're taller and lankier, which would happen to humans if we were on a lower gravity world.
Sure.
And the dwarves are a higher gravity world, so they're more dense, they're shorter, they're stockier, and pretty strong, which, again, would happen.
They have big ape arms. Their arms, like, extend past their knees. It's one of the only things about them that looks different from a fantasy dwarf is that they have big, long arms.
Yeah, the one problem is, of course, that while we would probably be, like, taller and lankier on a lower grav world, we wouldn't have pointy ears.
Or no magic. I mean, it's just elves. They just put elves in their game, and then they were like, well, we're going to have to justify elves. It looks like reverse engineering and not organic engineering.
It's definitely one of those things where they're like, well, we're doing a space fantasy thing. We kind of want to be rifts, but let's not do that. Instead, we'll be actual aliens instead of just shit on Earth.
I felt like it was kind of like D&D with a ladle of 40K poured over it.
Hot piping 40K.
Yeah, they just got a little dip of that 40K, just drooled it onto the book, onto their D&D game, and it turned some of the races into animals. And they were like, yeah, good enough.
Yeah. Oh, you can tell the system-wise, and stat-wise and everything, it is very much D&D again.
Yeah, it would have to be second edition D&D, because it predates third edition by a ways.
Oh, yeah. Which is why magic in this isn't crazy. Because it's from old school versions of Magic, where Magic was very—it's
boring,
boring and simple, and didn't do everything you ever wanted it to.
This book has a lot of Shadowrun in it too, in terms of the way that they have to balance the magic points versus the cybernetics points, and you can only have so much of one without it throwing off your ability to have the other one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the stats here, because this book's got a lot of them.
Yep. So you're gonna start the game. You're going to get a point buy for what you're doing with your stuff.
And the point buy is where the random element comes in, because you get a random number of starting points.
Yep. So even though they went the point buy route, they couldn't just let every character be balanced against each other. You had to get a random amount of points to buy with.
That's correct. And I don't remember the exact exact role for that, but it generates about 100 points, give or take.
Well, you get, it's like 20 D6, which you roll for added on to 40, so you can get anywhere from
80
like
to 120.
From 60 to 120.
There you go, from 60 to 120 points. And you're going to spread those out amongst the following attributes. Strength, int, intelligence. One of those.
It includes all of the classic D&D stats. You've got strength, Dex, con, intelligence, will, and charisma. So you have all of your basic stats.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just added agility and appearance because they wanted to make appearance separate from your charisma.
And they did the dexterity slash agility thing so that one of them can be for ranged weapons and, like, jumping. Or not ranged weapons, and the other one's for, like, jumping and swinging a sword.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they added appearance because this game was clearly from someone who played a lot of second edition, where people were always trying to add comeliness to their game.
Yeah. Remember, there was always like, Well, you take your charisma and you add your endurance and then you divide by strength and you add, you're like, and that's how sexy you are. Why did you do that?
Why would anyone?
Can't
need to
I
know?
Just say my guy is sexy
or not sexy?
Yeah,
it's so. I used to have a DM who did the comeliness stat thing, and it was just another 3d6 you also rolled. And all he did was he only cared about it if you were playing a lady character.
Well, of course.
Yeah, and then all it was it affected how annoying shopkeepers were.
Good.
That was literally it. It was just like, did you roll a high comeliness score? The shopkeeper follows you around the shop.
Ugh.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least then you're getting that little peek into the life of a lady.
Great. This is just what I needed. That's how I became a feminist.
Yeah.
Was I rolled a high comeliness score once.
Because a nerd showed me what he thinks people will do to someone that is pretty.
Ladies, a nerd was annoying to me once when I was 13. I think I'm as much of a feminist as any of you.
I'm pretty sure I understand the struggle.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that we've solved feminism right here on the show just now.
All right, mission accomplished. Let's hang that banner.
Let's all go home. Hopefully there's a sandwich waiting for me.
Ladies.
Sexism.
Yeah, so, all right. But instead of the wisdom, you have will, and it's gets described as being sort of the same strength of your willpower, your wisdom, whatever. But in this, it's actually useless for everything unless you get ridiculously high points in it. But there are 4 derived stats, and all of them use will. So it's a stat that does nothing for you by itself, which means you'd normally look at it and go, well, this is garbage, why would I put points into it? But every derived stat uses it.
Yep.
Great.
Now, the derived stats are your humanity, which this book uses humanity and humanists and so on a lot, which is weird for a game that's supposed to be about an equal amount of various types of alien races hanging out on a planet. And let's make a note of this. Even though there are elves and dwarves that are basically just tall and short humans that have been from high-grav and low-grav planets, they're not humans that got there first and have been living there for millennia or anything like that.
No, these are actual aliens.
Yeah, elves are aliens. They're not just tall, low-grav humans. So it's weird that you have to have a humanity stat to measure, and that's the thing that always bothers me.
It's super anthropocentric.
Yeah, exactly. It's anthropocentric, and it's annoying. And it doesn't need to be there.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Stupid humans.
Heliocentrism is the worst. But it comes up in a lot of things. It comes up in Star Trek. That's like the worst part about Star Trek for me, is whenever Kirk's like, these aliens are so noble, they're almost human. It's like, oh, fuck you, man. They don't want to hear that.
Maybe you're almost like them.
Yeah.
Huh?
You ever think of that?
Yeah.
You dick.
Yeah. Kirk, you asshole.
Right.
Okay.
So humanity is the average of your will and constitution. And then you use that to determine your LFP, which is the amount of cybernetics that you can have, and also the total amount of magic that you can have.
Yeah. So your LFP is your life
focus
fucking points.
Life focus points or something like that.
And it's how much life energy you have. Mm-hmm. So you use that to either cast spells, so it's like your mana,
mm-hmm.
or if you have cybernetic enhancements, it's how much life energy you have that you can trade away for cybernetics.
Correct. And the LFP is 10 times your humanity. Or 5 times your humanity if you're a cat guy or a bear guy.
Because you're not as human.
Oh, yeah, I mean, theoretically, it's because it's a balance, and it's because those two have a bunch of stat bonuses.
Oh, yeah, you're ridiculously stat-heavy if you get one of the animal guys.
Right. But instead, it's just because you're not human. It's further from human, so you get less points, and you can't be as cybernetic or as magic-y. But that's okay, because you can just put on an exosuit and blast away with cool guns.
Yeah, the coolest guns.
The best guns. Captain Beef Dip does not settle for crappy guns. He wants to see your guns, by the way.
Yeah. Show me your guns.
Yeah.
Show me your moves.
Right. That's him right there. Right before he gets set to knock you off a jousting thing with one of those giant Q-tips.
Yeah. He just goes, show me your moves. Judge your enemies by their will to survive.
And then after that, we're going to go to a foam party. I'm Captain Beef Dip. Okay. All right. Oh, by the way, I wanted to talk briefly about the picture of the human, the generic stock human.
Oh, generic stock human? Yeah. What about him?
He has a head.
He sort of does.
That's about 10% of the size that a human head should be. Like, it's like they drew a normal G.I. Joe guy body with a big old bonch. I mean, look at that bonch.
Yeah, no, he's wide.
He's wide, and he's packing what appears to be a sharpened loaf of sourdough bread instead of junk. Because, again, this book's pretty Tom's of Planet Finland. But it's like they forgot to deal with that when they got up to the head. They just put on a head from somewhere else because it's way too small.
Yeah.
Like, his shoulders are way bigger than his head. It's amusing.
Which, let me say, I will at least give them one thing. Credit where it's due, at least the human society isn't just glossed over as humans are in space and they're humans. Anyway, let's get to the aliens.
Humans are the most adaptable.
No, it's just, what distinguishes humans if you have to give a blurb like, I'm an alien reading about humans? Oh, they're a corporate society. They worry about capitalism, and they're all about getting that dollar. And governments have been taken over by corporations, and that's what their society is all about. So in the same way that, like, elves are all about living in nature and casting spells, and dwarves are all about tinkering and making things, humans are all about fucking you over and taking your money.
Yeah, it's nice that they basically gave humans a trait beyond just being the most adaptable and the most human-y.
Yeah, don't just make us Mario, give us something.
That's pretty, so it's cool they did that. Of course, what they gave them is, these guys are the Ferengi.
Yeah, which, that's fine, we basically are anyway.
Yeah, why not, that's pretty great. Okay, so, and then there are two more derived stats to go through real quick. They are awareness, which is what you roll for, like, initiative checks and stuff, and it's the average of your int and your will.
Yerp.
And then there's speed, which is the average of con and agility. So that's the only one that doesn't get informed by will. Now, here's something that drives me nuts about this game in general.
Yarr. It's driving me nuts.
That's why I've got this steering wheel down me trousers. Ha ha! I'm a joke from the internet.
Ha ha ha! The internet.
Someone shared this to me in an email not long ago.
Forward, forward, forward. Thought you'd find this funny.
You remember those email chains of jokes?
Oh my god. I never was on that because my grandparents never bothered to figure out computers, so I didn't get letters about how Obama is actually a communist or, like, letters of look at this funny cat and then it's a picture with 17 pages of forward text.
I miss those days. I'm sad that we've moved on to where everything is now a pithy colored rectangle with a bunch of artifacting problems on it.
Well, now you don't need to send it. You just post it on Facebook.
Just retweet it on Facebook. Broccoli cures breast cancer. What the scientists don't want you to know.
All good.
If you won't stand behind our troops, stand in front of them. I have a weird idea that our troops should shoot you. I'm on Facebook.
Welcome to Facebook.
Right. Well, anyway, the thing that drives me nuts is that the attribute modifier table in this thing is different for every attribute.
Oh, yeah.
Like, dramatically.
They didn't hit the, because it's pre-third ed, we don't have that very streamlined, like, okay, you hit this breakpoint, everything's a +1, then everything's a +2. It's just like, all right, I have a 14 in something. What does that mean? Well, you'll have to check the individual stat.
You'll have to look up this giant chart that indicates that you have a 14 appearance, you have a +1. But if you have a 14 con, you have a +2. And if you have a 14 will, you get nothing, sir. Good day. And my favorite, if you have a 14 intellect, you have +0.20. Because every time you use intellect for anything, it's to determine the number of skill points you have. And you modify it by multiplying that by the value that your intellect generates.
Yeah. So you get 0.2% or 0.2 times whatever your thing is, and then you add that onto the base.
Yeah, it's bad math. They should have said multiply it by 1.2, but instead they say divide it by 5 and then add the resulting amount to your stat, unless you had some other number, because you can also get a +0.60 and so on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's a little don't look back, terror is never far behind thee.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. Whatever, if someone wants to make me do math, which, oh my god, they want me to do math. They put, like, little equations for everything.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
They sure do. Every time it's like, how does a skill work? And it's like, weapon skill plus mod plus 1d20 equals target number plus mod plus.
Like,
they always end with a plus for some reason. Like, the last thing is a plus.
It's weird because it's not an equation. It's telling you what you would need to roll. So it's like, oh, you need to have your skill plus mod plus a d20. And that's what you roll to try and hit something. But it says equals target number plus. And you're like, what?
What? You have to get them to line up to get a success? That's
it has to equal this.
Yeah, if it does not equal, then the equation is not finished. But that's too bad. My favorite one of all those is the one for initiative calculation. Because it's agility plus agility mod plus a d20 plus skill plus something or other. Which means that you have to take your agility stat, which is just a regular stat, and then add it to the mod that the agility stat generates. Like, imagine if that was a 4th edition D&D thing, and it was like, okay, this does strength plus strength mod damage.
Huh. Oh, good.
So, that was a weird one, but it's just one of the ones that's in there. Okay, power sources and so on for this game. This game has no classes.
Nope, everything is skill-based. You spend your skill points to get stuff, and that stuff is various skills, and magic itself is just a skill.
Right, so if you want a bunch of skills, or a bunch of magic, you're going to end up being a little less skillful than a skill monkey character.
Yeah, and it's interesting because not only is magic a skill, just baseline, the ability to cast spells, every spell individually is its own skill. So if I can't just say, oh, I put, 10 points into pyromancy and now all of my fire spells are good. No, if I want to be a pyromancer, I gotta go, all right, so I've got 10 points in create fire, I have 10 points in manipulate fire, I have 10 points in fireball, and so on and so on.
Right. And then, so basically there are spells in a bunch of different schools, and there are things like air, fire, earth, necromancy, light.
Yeah, so you shadow. Get all the elemental stuff, and then a few of the little niche ones.
Right. And it's a little confusing, because, like, for example, the first air spell is odor, and then it says none, A, one turn, 10 LFP. Okay, LFP is, in this case, is being used as the mana cost. And yep. Except that this game is really big on letting you make your spells cheaper by being better at casting spells.
Yeah, so the more points you put into a skill or spell, the better you are at doing it. So if I have just a couple points in a spell, then I'm not that great at casting it, and it's fairly expensive. But if I really dedicate and I've got like 25 points into a spell, then it's super cheap, I cast it super easily, it lasts longer, it has a better range, and so on and so on. So you just get all of these bonuses if you put more points into one thing.
Right. Now, odor, for example, this spell produces any odor known to the caster. You know, Captain Beef Dip knows a lot of odors.
He knows a lot of otters.
Oh, you're right. Know a lot about gay culture.
Yeah,
look
at that. I'm learning.
That's wonderful. He also knows a lot of odors, though. I mean, let's be fair.
Let's Beef Dip.
If you've never been in a bear club, that's, it kind of smells like a gym. In a gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
It smells like Jim. You know, that smelly guy.
That guy you know, Jim. It's... man. Anyway. Okay. Beyond spells being a source of power, this book's got a lot of cybernetics. Except it doesn't call them that.
God damn it. I hate it so much.
Oh, why don't you say what it is? Let's say I wanted to join a cybernetics unit of some kind. Like, I wanted to get together with a bunch of fellas and do some cybernetics with them. You know, just...
You know, me and some guys getting together, putting our cybernetics... Nothing gay, just, yeah. You know, some guys enjoying cybernetics together.
Yeah, yeah, in the woods to charge your cybernetics energy crystals. Yeah, yeah, what would you call that? What would that be?
Why, that would be the Cybe Squad.
Oh, the Cybe Squad.
Cybe Squad.
Okay, so it's probably supposed to be Cybe Squad.
No, it's Cybe. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. It is Cybe. It's Cybe.
Cybe. So you have to join the Cybe Squad. Okay, this happens a couple times throughout the book. They knock one letter off or add an extra letter to try and get
you to
set.
Yeah, we're futuristic now.
And they also have a couple of things where they obviously borrow from Shadowrun. So, for example, I like the monoblade sword that you can get in this. Because perhaps you're familiar with Shadowrun, or when Shadowrun borrowed it from, I think, one of the William Gibson novels.
Yeah.
The concept of a monofilament weapon, which is something that's one molecule thick, so it's very, very, very sharp.
Yeah, when you have that monomolecular blade.
Monomolecular, or monofilament blade.
However, this is just a monoblade.
Oh, it's a sword with one blade.
Oh my god.
The technology of the future. It's like a knife with one blade, guys.
Oh my god, that means the other side of this sword is dull. Congratulations, that's what you've done.
That's what a lot of swords are. That's what a katana is, and that's what nerds are always faffing on about.
Faffing about their katanas.
No one ever sharpens the other side of a katana. It's...
Oh, but what if they did, though?
Oh, dude.
What if you were, like, iaijutsu, and you, like, went and killed a guy, and then you just, like, you brought the sword back and killed another guy?
What if your sword was one handle with two swords coming out?
What if my eye glowed and I wore a lot of pouches, but you never saw my feet.
Okay, so now you're describing Rob Liefeld, famed and noted Marvel artist.
I'm describing Rob Liefeld, who is known to wear a lot of pouches and have a glowing eye.
I kind of hope he does. I love if his drawing was from life and not just from not being good at making eyes line up.
Oh my god, that would be amazing. If you like saw the Liefeld family portrait and everyone was actually made the way he draws.
Oh yeah, there's a cloud over all their feet because they live in a cloudy, foggy country. They live in the lowlands.
This is my mom, and you're like, oh my god, her back is all twisted around, and her boobs are bigger than her head.
She's wearing pouches over her thighs, which the pouch is bigger than Batman's utility belt because her thighs are the size of manhole covers. However, everyone is apparently standing on tiptoes, even though you can't see their feet, so you can't confirm it.
Anyway,
the reason that we're making fun of Liefeld right now is because this book has probably about 5 artists in it. One of them gave us the wonderful reboot-style CGI images, and he did that again in a non-color section where he just drew a bunch of big bubbly guns.
Yay, bubble guns.
Like, literally, the section in this book about guns looks almost exactly like the test work for the Super Soaker design. Like, everything's made out of big, obvious ovals and has bubbles all over it.
Yeah, the old-school 3D imaging software did not really let you get hard edges as well as they probably would have.
Yeah.
Because everything just looks like I made this out of a balloon animal.
Yeah.
Like,
well, look at this
it's
thing.
Terrible.
Look at this laser rifle. This thing probably says CX-2000 by Super Soaker on the side of it.
Oh, 100%. This shit is nerfed to the extreme.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. It's weird because every time... So that's to one of the artists. He draws us this 3D modeling stuff. There's another one who actually drew the races, and that guy likes to draw the races, so whenever you see a bear or a cat man, that's him. And his stuff is competent, it looks kind of like Riff's art, like okay Riff's art.
Yeah.
Then you got a guy who only draws Rob Liefeld comic book women.
Yep. And they, no matter what they are doing, are probably at least half naked.
Surrounded by a crackling nimbus of lightning.
And standing either with their feet obscured or on point.
Yeah, and generally, like, they're always described... It's funny because whoever wrote the book has to describe these art pieces he gets of them, and he's like, okay, this one is ice. She's a bounty hunter wizard who uses ice spells, but is super badass even though she's a wizard. And then you get this picture, and it's like just some random toss-off background character from a copy of a 95 X-Force. And what's worse is that there's legitimately characters in this that look like Forearm.
Oh, yeah. No, that's actually probably... The biggest level cybernetic enhancement you can get is 2 extra arms.
Yeah, and it's called like Quandex or something, or Quardex.
Whatever. So you get all your standard cybernetic enhancement stuff. It's like, okay, you can get a replacement, so it's just like your arm, it's a regular arm, but now it's a cybernetic arm or a regular replacement eye. And then you can get things like, I've got telescopic vision, or... I've got a little hole in my arm that has a gun, or whatever the hell it is.
All of them subtract some of your essential humanity, and it's a random amount. So, for example, if you have gills, then you lose 5d6 plus 5 of your essential humanity.
Which is, okay, sure, but if you get to a certain point of humanity loss, you get, like, cybe crazy.
You risk becoming what they call a cyborg, which, you know, you're a cyborg the moment you put a piece of metal in you that's permanent.
Yeah.
That's a cyborg, is a partially robot-y human. But in this, it's a dangerous thing.
If you go cyborg, you've ditched your humanity, and all you care about is being in the cybe squad.
Once you go cybe, you never go nighy.
Yes. You never go Nighy. Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy would never take you back. Who would have you now? Not known character actor Bill Nighy, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Yeah. He hates that. There's one thing I've learned about Bill Nighy in his many appearances.
Yeah.
Every time he's on, like, Letterman, he's like, you know what I hate? Cyborgs.
That even works into his characters. When he played, Davy Jones.
Yeah, and he's walking around on deck, and he's like, oh, I hate cyborgs.
I'm a huge fan of Finding Me Lost Key, but I can't abide Robotman.
Also, apparently, children are after me Lucky Charms.
What was he supposed to be? He's supposed to be, like, Welsh or something, I think.
I don't know.
I would say he was Welsh, but I never once heard him call anyone Boyo.
So, you know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Anyway, Anyway, you lose a random amount of your essential cybernetic, or your life points if you become more and more cybernetic. And the reason it's random is because there's this risk of becoming a monster, like a cybernetic, don't care about humans at all, and as soon as it happens to you, you get put down, monster. It's gotta be random, or else everyone would just build up to their exact level.
Just go, alright, well, I've got like 1 point left, I didn't go overboard, and now I'm fine.
Everything's great. But it is kind of amusing because there are a whole bunch of completely inessential things that strip away your essential humanity and your ability to cast spells.
Well, the weird thing is, it also works with any of the stuff that's just replacement. So any of the ones that's like, oh, what is this? Oh, I lost my arm. I have a new arm. It doesn't have, like, claws that shoot out. It doesn't have a laser finger. It's just an arm.
Right.
You're like, okay, great. And it lets me still feel things like as if I was human and so on. Okay, great. And then if you lose a leg and an eye or whatever, you're in some explosion, and you get all of that replaced, and you just happen to roll really high randomly, you're like, I'm a regular normal guy that happens to have cybernetic limbs, but brrrrg!
Things like, you can automatically change your hair color.
Oh yeah, that's a great one. They also have that for eye color.
And tattoos, and every one of them strips away a piece of your essential humanity. You could go crazy and become a cyborg because you thought it'd be neat to have changing tattoos.
Well, it's true, because anyone who dyes their hair or has tattoos has lost a part of their essential humanity.
That's why they're not allowed to work at SeaWorld. I think everyone knows that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in my day, when I was a kid, we believed in American values.
That's correct.
We believed in an America that was pure and had some integrity. You didn't have tattoos. You believed that skin should be pure and unblemished and white.
And facial hair began with a mustache and ended with a better mustache. None of this crazy beard nonsense.
Yeah.
Sideburns for days. I just can't abide it. You know what costs the most LFP is abortions.
I right?
You get an abortion and it's like 10d10 plus 10.
That strips your humanity away.
Yeah.
Also being a woman.
Yeah, that's the worst. You start with less to begin with.
All okay.
Right. Okay, that's enough of that segue of weird. Okay, now here's a funny thing for me. There's this whole section on cybernetics and joining the Cybe Squad and what have you. And then there's a section right before it about how to build exosuits, which are basically robot power suits. And damned if it isn't the exact same shit as cybernetics, except it doesn't make you go crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, they always have this bit in the tech-centric games, no matter what it is, that's sci-fi, where they go, okay, yeah, you can do all of this crazy crap that's probably either better than magic or better than cybernetics, but the limitation is you have to be in a suit or you're piloting a ship or you're doing whatever, and you go, yeah, but if I'm a guy who does that, like, if as a DM you go, all right, well, you get jumped by guys and you can't get to your thing, you're like, oh, well, now you're just being a dick.
Right.
It's essentially the same as being like, all right, well, you cast all your spells and you have no more fucking LFP. Now you get jumped. Okay, great.
Yeah, it's one of those dare the DM not to be a dick things. Absolutely is. And it's stupid. But so in this game, you can build these exosuits that, according to the 3D image modeling in the back, kind of look like mid-sized sedans with feet.
It looks like the, what is it, the ED-209?
Yeah, they kind of look like ED-209s. Like ED-209s, but with four doors and spacious trunk availability, because you don't need to keep a criminal's brain in them.
Oh, you don't have to.
You could. You could fit up to 50 cubic feet of criminal's brains in there. Also, drive it around on gray rocks or at the beach. It's up to you, really.
It's your life. Live it your way.
Yeah, judge your enemies by their will to survive. With Volkswagen.
Oh, was that a Nazi joke?
I don't know. I didn't think about that until you said so.
Sweet.
But now I'm willing to take that credit.
Sure, why not?
Okay, great.
Also, I do have to mention, this includes one of my big pet peeves, whereas Jeff always hates the merit and flaws systems and things.
There's none of those in here.
Nope, but it has my big pet peeve, which is a giant goddamn fuck-off useless skill list.
Oh, yeah. This book's got about, like, 120-ish skills.
Oh, yeah. And you can't, of course, just have, like, a melee thing. You have to get, like, axe and flail and knife. And martial arts has then six sub-martial arts you can be into. And
this is one of my favorite things about this book, is that every time there's something, there's six of it, because there's five races. So it has two humans and then the ones from other people. So, like, languages, you can speak Earth, New Earth, or elf, dwarf, cat guy, bear guy. Martial arts, you can learn human martial arts, a specific human martial art. I think it's taekwondo. And then bear martial arts, cat martial arts, elf martial arts, and dwarf martial arts.
Yep. Yeah, it's just annoying because...
It's got the Palladium problem, where it's got 200 skills, and the vast majority of them are pointless. Like, there's not going to come up a point in your game where you're going to need your genetic skill.
No, they have skills for things that you could just go, you have a science skill, I don't care, let's hand wave it.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, instead 15 different specific sciences you can learn, and yes, I know that that would be the way it would work in real life, but if I'm playing a game about a Edge of the Galaxy frontier bounty hunter who's a badass in the Cybe squad.
There's a lot of badassery in this book. That's the basic concept behind it.
Yeah, no, everything is definitely a badass, but I don't need to know what my botany skill is. Like, that's not a thing I need. I'm not going to be wandering around, and there's a survival skill. It's not even like, oh, I use my botany to know if I should eat these berries on this weird planet, because you could just use survival and do that anyway. It's fucking terrible, and I hate when games do this.
Also, a lot of the skills, the only thing about them is they give you a very brief description of what they do. So they'll be like, genetics, this is the ability to do genetic manipulation. And then it's got a list of penalties listed. Like, oh, you're bad at genetics if it's not your species, or if it's an alien species. And then that comes up a lot, because it's like, survival. This is difficult on an alien planet. Okay, is Ravenstar an alien planet? I don't know. I don't know the rules for that.
Yeah, am I supposed to be from here? Is that going to be a penalty or no? Maybe?
I don't know. I don't know that rule.
Yeah, and it's fucking... It has a skill for bartending in this. Ugh. Eat my dick. This is terrible. Do not do that.
So that's... And granted, that's... This book has... Here's what I thought. When I first looked at the cover of this book, I was like, oh, this is D&D plus 40K. And then I read it, and I realized what it actually is Rifts plus X-Force. I mean, it is very, very mid-90s Marvel. There's no reason you need to know how good at botany you are, because your character is going to be jumping out of a helicopter and seeing if he can shout four catchphrases before he hits the ground.
This is true. And because a turn is
two seconds. Yeah.
And the fact that you can do whatever during a turn means, yeah, in the, like, 10 seconds it takes you to fall down from somewhere, you can spout five different catchphrases.
Which is nice, but what you can't do is move and attack.
Oh, that's sad.
You can move or attack in any given turn. Or you can concentrate enough to cast a spell, which means spells are cast fucking fast.
Or you can aim.
Now, they describe spells in this game as being like a ritual plus an expenditure of life points. Oh, yeah, that guy. That guy.
I just found a guy that I'm pretty sure is anthropomorphic meatloaf. Not the singer, just the actual loaf of ground beef.
Also, if you wouldn't mind, I'm sorry we're going kind of visual here, folks, but I found this picture as well. And again, it just looks like a Rob Liefeld drawn bad guy for one issue. Like, he's just a big meaty guy. In the 90s, X-Men had powers that didn't make any sense. There was like, what can you do? I could teleport to locations where the month is different. I can open up a vibrational channel to the dimensional energy vortex of shadow beings. Like, this guy looks like his power is to swell until he is totally swole.
Oh, yeah. No, this guy does no cardio. He has not lost any of his gains. It is insane.
Anyway, could you do me a favor and tell me what page that guy is on?
He is on page 89, and...
It's all like buzzsaw hands and shit. It's a cybernetics page.
Yeah.
That dude has no cybernetics.
I think it's because it also has the exo boot, and he is wearing the biggest, dumbest boots you can have.
Oh, you're right. Look at that. Look at his big, stupid, one-toe elephant feet.
Yeah, it basically looks like he has... elephant feet that they then got a little juddy foot out from.
You know
the
what he
tip.
Looks like now that I'm looking at that? He looks like a reimagined high grit future version of Strong Sad.
I'm mad that I'm flying.
Yeah, that's what you got right there.
Great. Love it.
So that's the basic concept behind this book. It's grim and gritty, but the hard assets didn't quite get there for
it. Not quite.
All right. So what else do we have that's in this book? The problem I had when reading through this is that there just wasn't that much to talk about. It's a space heartbreaker, and that's really what it is. I mean, you have races, you have a couple of classes, you've got cybernetics, some rudimentary magic, and you've got suits you can get into, and that's really about it. I mean,
yeah.
And mostly after that, you just kind of bust up drug deals and face kick each other. Bah.
Yeah. So there's the way you do anything in this system is you're trying to hit a target number. and unless otherwise specified, it's always 20. You're trying to roll a 20 on a 20-sided die.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to add a bunch of stats to it to try and hit
so
that.
So you will usually add in whatever skill you've got,
mm-hmm.
Any mod that you have,
from
if you've
stat.
Got one from a stat.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of depends on what else you're doing. You might have situational bonuses or penalties, whatever. But that's basically it, which makes the beginning of the game, you almost have to specialize real heavily in whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
Because trying to roll a 20, if you're like, oh, I dabbled and I've got like 4 points in whatever skill, you're like, great, you're never going to do this. Like, because the target number is always
20. Yeah, it can be, it ranges from 10 to 50, where 10 is super easy and 50 is nearly impossible, it says. Let's be clear, it is actually impossible.
Oh, yeah. Like,
so the maximum you can get your stat to, or your, yeah, here's why it's nearly impossible. Because the maximum you can get a skill to is 25, and the maximum stat can be is 20, which means you can get about, up to about plus 28. So you roll a d20, you can get up to about a 48.
Yeah. It's real sad. I don't know why they decided to go that high.
I don't know.
They say in the beginning of the book, basically just always make it 20 unless you have a reason not to.
Yeah.
And even then, maybe you'd go down to like 10 or up to 30. But
right.
If you went above 30, you're just saying to your players, no, you're not doing this.
Right. So it's weird, but it's interesting because that's also the difficulty to hit somebody and the difficulty to block somebody trying to hit you. It's modified by dodge. If you have a high agility enough to get an agility modifier, then that is added to the difficulty to hit you. That's what dodge does. So, like, if you have a 17 agility, which gives you a dodge of 2, because your mod
yeah.
is 2, then the difficulty for someone to hit you is they are trying to beat a 22 on a die.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you can also try to block things. That's an active defense. You can choose to make a passive and an active defense by saying, alright, I'll try and block this. I will roll against a difficulty of 20 to block.
Yeah. The weird thing is you also get the crits and fumbles, so rolling a 20 or rolling a 1 gives you a crit or a fumble. And then there's a chart for what happens if you do a crit or a fumble.
Oh yeah, there's a big old crits and fumbles chart. I thought that was some good reading.
Yeah, so if I'm making an attack and I crit and then I roll again to see what happens, if I roll a 1 through 4, it does nothing. So 1 through 4 on a crit, nothing happens, normal damage, and it goes up to things like, oh, you got him in the leg, he is at half movement, okay, great. Or you punched him in the larynx, he loses speech, make a save roll, or become unconscious. Wow, alright. All the way up to 20, head struck, make save roll, or die.
Yeah, and this is one of those problems where this is something that is going to affect the players worse than it's ever going to affect the monsters. The longer you play your character, the more likely you are to eventually roll that one and have to do a fumble chart and see what horrible thing you do to yourself or to someone standing near you. Where monsters...
Which includes a critical hit on a friend,
yeah.
Which you then go to the critical hit chart and you might just, again, roll a make, save, roll, or die, which is 17 through 20 on the crit table. So you might just go, all right, I rolled a 1, and then a 20, and then a 16, and now you die.
There's a universal problem with letting... monsters interact with the crit and fumble system along with players, which is that they only need to get lucky once, where players need to basically stay median lucky all the way through the life of that character.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always something you run into when you see these old crit and fumble charts. I did think it was kind of fun, though. This book's also got charts for rolling how tall and fat you are. It's one of my favorite things in this book is how much do you weigh, modified by plus 10 pounds if you're a dwarf, plus 30 pounds if you're a cat, and that's it.
Ah.
They forgot to put in the weight modification for playing as an 8-foot bear man. I guess they're just all willowy. They're just like giant Iggy Pops.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You go to touch them and you realize it's all fur. They're not actually huge.
It's just a pair of eyes and some sneakers.
Yeah, that's how Bugs Bunny takes care of things in Ravenstar. And then you get the martial arts is wonderful in this because it's not just, oh, you're able to do an unarmed strike. Oh, goodness, no. You have a whole bunch of, like, arm locks and throws and hadoukens and shit that you can do if you have martial arts. And it all depends on the skill level you've got and which martial art you're in.
Yeah, at first when I started reading through the crazy huge martial arts section, I thought it was going to be one of those put two cards on the table and flip them over and reveal them type things. But really, it's more like pick the one strike that does 66 damage and ignore all the ones that do 1d6 plus 2.
Well, yeah, because it's like, oh, you can do a strike. Well, what do the different strikes do? Well, you can do a spin punch that's a D6, a Kanshu, which is 2D6, a power strike for 2D6 plus 2, or a dragon fist for 3D6, and any armor is half of its damage resistance. You're like, well, considering none of these take an extra action to do, I guess I'll just show Ryuken forever.
Forward, down, down, forward, punch, over and over and over again. It's a bit of an old school problem. Palladium made that exact same mistake.
Oh yeah, as soon as you go, well, you could punch a guy for a D4 or kick him for a D6, these are both treated the exact same way in the system. You're like, well, I guess I'll always be kicking.
Yeah, I'll just be Kick Kicker, the kicking kicker.
Ah, Kick Kickington.
Yes. Kit Kickington, the Earl of Cheese Dudes. Oh, no, wait, or was that Dudley Cheesington or something? I don't know, who cares? All right, moving right back to this.
You get, in addition to everything else you've got in your combat, you have damage reduction.
Oh, yeah, so it's got your NBA.
You've got your NBA, and depending on how good the NBA is, you will take less damage, and that is your natural body armor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's derived from your stats. So, depending on how much con you've got, you'll get more NBA.
Something like that. And it can only drop to a minimum of one, so you always take one damage. The life track in this game is shenanigans.
The life track is White Wolf got expanded upon, but it's way more punishing.
It's like White Wolf... It's like a bar chart where the XY axis is White Wolf and the AB axis is Shadowrun.
Huh.
Because it's got the Shadowrun severe to critical damage modifier chart, and then it's also got the White Wolf fill-in boxes based on the number, like, or on your penalty chart thing. It's called your LFP, and it literally looks like a battery testing guide or something. So basically, like, when you're lightly wounded, you have an L4 type wound, and then if you get another wound in there, it's an L5. Then you go to a serious wound, which is an S1, and if you have an S1, then you're a -2 to hit.
And anytime you take any penalty, so there's, like, 12 different... tracks in here, and each track has like 6 different damage boxes.
Yeah.
So once you fill that in, as soon as you get through the first 6, so if you are anything but uninjured, the second you drop down to injured at all, you have to start making saves to see if you stay conscious.
Yeah. And, as soon as you hit F, and F, which is fatal type wounds, is about 3/4 of the box.
And the F ones, you have to see if you maintain consciousness and see if you die.
Right.
So you have to do both of them.
Right. So basically, if anyone hits you with anything, you start struggling to remain conscious for most of the rest of the fight.
Yeah, and it's weird because it's not, oh, I've taken some damage, and then once I get past that, then I start seeing if I'm going to pass out. It's either I'm perfectly okay, or I pass out. And you're like, what? You're just fine, and then someone goes, hey, dink, and then you're like, and you just fall over.
There you go. That's what, I don't know. It's very 90s. There's some good things about this. It's simple-ish. I mean, I want to say it's simple because there's a core mechanic to it, but the core mechanic seems to kind of be squiggly and it keeps changing from thing to thing.
Well, you've got only D20s and D6s are the only things you use in the game.
Yeah.
So they have, in the magic system, all your damaging spells have the same progression of damage, so they only go up to 3D6.
Right.
So you never have the, like, this one is better at damage than this one. It's just sort of what flavor do you want.
Which is good, yeah.
It has some decent streamlining to the old D&D mentality of things.
Yeah, it has some good ideas.
It just still suffers from being an early 90s game, which means it's got a bunch of crap that does not need to be in there.
A ton of charts that don't make any sense connected to other charts and all the stats do different things instead of doing one simple thing. It looks like they had some ideas that would later go on to become 3rd edition D&D.
Yeah, I mean, you can see in games like this of the time that they knew that you needed to do some streamlining, something needed to change.
Mm-hmm.
They just hadn't quite worked the formula out yet.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, you want to get to your favorite and least favorite?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's get it on with it. John, what would you say is your favorite thing about Ravenstar?
Favorite thing about Ravenstar, we didn't talk about it much, but I actually like the setting. The setting is fine. It's, it's almost like Firefly-esque. You've got this Western frontiers type thing. That
there's a lot of gangster stuff mixed into it. Well, a lot, Chicago gangster stuff.
Well, you are in New Chicago.
Right.
But the whole thing is very much about you are trying to live a hard scrabble life out on the frontier. It adds the tech and magic in there. It's got that almost kitchen sink type thing that Rifts does, but it doesn't go as crazy with it, which is really one of the things holding it back, in my opinion, is it didn't go crazy enough.
Not quite crazy enough. That's absolutely right.
But I do, the setting is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you're out on the rim of the galaxy, you've gotta rely on your wits and your gun to get by. And I'm like, okay, your setting is fine. Ravenstar as a world is fine. I don't have a problem.
I'm okay with it. I'm even okay with its funny races.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so your favorite thing in the book.
Let's see. I'm going to say my favorite thing in the book is the variety of cybernetic upgrades you can purchase. I thought they were kind of fun and interesting. You can build yourself with four arms, which a lot of the models in the book do. You can get, like, axes that can come out of you and buzz saws, and that's fun. I've always been a fan of the fun cybernetic list building. I'm not especially enamored of the whole you will lose your humanity on a random chance, but I like the idea of building a cool cybernetic guy with gills and ever-shifting tattoos and four huge arms and big weird feet.
Yeah, I think if you got rid of the whole you cyber freak out and just become a killer if you accidentally roll too high.
You just made it a maximum. Like, you're done cybernetting at this point.
Yeah, it's okay, you've run out of points.
Yeah.
If you do anything more, then you'll go crazy.
Right.
Like, at that point, sure.
That would be fine. As it stands, you spend every day making a death save to make sure you don't go insane and kill your friends. But otherwise, I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? What would you say is your least favorite thing about Ravenstar?
The worst thing in this book to me, I already mentioned it, the skills. I hate anything that has pointless levels of skills. Skills that needlessly go into subcategories of skills that you would then have to spend points within subcategories for things. Unless you are giving me enough points that I could do something with that system, it ends up being... especially in here, where because of the target numbers, you have to have specialized really heavily in mm-hmm. a skill. I'm not going to know anything about anything except for the, like, four skills that I picked.
Yeah.
And if I'm a mage, then I don't know dick about anything. Like,
you just cast four spells.
Yeah, I cast my spells. That's all I do. If anyone's like, hey, do you even know how to tie your shoes? You'd go, no, I do not know how to do anything.
Right.
You're like, maybe you picked, like, drive. You've got the drive skill and spells. And then someone comes up to you and you're like, well, what do you do, mage? You're like, I'm a good driver. Definitely good driver. I'm a good driver.
I can cast light spell. I'll give it one thing about the skills I thought was actually pretty well done, and it's a little sidebar thing. If you have a skill, and then you take a similar skill, like if you pilot air car, which is the thing, air car and air bike are things in this.
Woo.
If you pilot air car, and you have a skill in air car of like 15, and you want to pick up air bike, it says, similar skills or skills in the same tree, if you would like to learn another one, you can start them at your current skill value of your current skill, minus 5. So instead of having to start at air bike all over, you can say, well, I'm already pretty good at air car, and now I'm all right at air bike.
However, it doesn't tell you exactly what that means, which means it's always up to the GM whether he thinks, like, is botany close enough to genetics, or do I need to do something else with that?
Genetics, I'm going to put down as one of the things in here that would have been my least favorite, because it says, genetics, you have a working knowledge of genetics. You're bad at it if it's an alien, but you know a lot about genetics and can do genetic testing and experimentation. And then it says, all genetic experimentation and testing is banned. Also, anyone who succeeds at genetic experimentation and testing will create someone who will turn into a gross mutant during their adolescence.
Hooray!
Why is this skill? Oh, here's a skill where you can make shitty monsters that don't do anything. Also, that's not how mutation works. I mean, I know that this book is just X-Force on another planet, but real mutation is you're born shitty. You don't become awesome when you're 13.
Yeah. Okay, so your least favorite thing in the book then?
I'm going to go back to the well about how I don't like this book's treatment of humanity as a factor.
Eh.
There are 5 alien races in this book, or humans are one of them, so I guess there's 4 alien races in this book, and there's one chart for hair color. Your bear is very likely to be blonde.
Well, yeah, you're gonna get a big blonde bear.
Yeah, even among earth bears, that's not very common. And I'm not talking about bears, I'm talking about bears.
Yeah, like Kodiaks.
Yeah, like Kodiaks and polar bears. The polar bears aren't blonde, their hair is see-through. It drove me nuts that this book was like, yeah, you know, dwarves and humans weigh the same, and all the races have the same chance to be left-handed, and all the races have the same chance to have dirt brown hair. It's like, why did you have five races from literally five alien planets if you were just going to treat them this Star Trek-y?
Well, the problem is, in the descriptions, they want to give some differentiation, but then they're like, wait a minute, this is the 90s, we've got to have a chart for everything.
Yeah, and
but then they just crapped out a chart.
We only have room for one chart, so you can't have a chart for what a Korcha's hair color is.
Yeah, we can't have, like, five different charts for hair color. That's going overboard.
Right, so I'm going to say, I don't really like it when books are about transhumanism and aliens and so on, and then they keep using humanity as a stat.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
It's just annoying. It's not like it's breaking the game or anything. It's not like you couldn't change humanity in the book to, like, essential life or key or something like that and be done with it. It's just silly that it's that way at all. Would you recommend or would you play Raven Star?
I don't think I would want to. It's essentially just a weird sci-fi game that doesn't bring anything unique to the table, is the biggest issue I have with it. It's not that the system is bad, it's that it's sort of generic enough that you wouldn't want to play this over something else. I could see, like, Ravenstar being a planet you go to in a different game.
Yeah, there's stuff in here that might be worth stealing for a different game.
Yeah, I think the idea of the setting, like I said, was good. It's just the system itself is nothing I would care about.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
So,
so my own answer is, no, the system doesn't really wow me. It's very 90s. I've played enough 90s games in my life. I don't need more. But there are some ideas in here that are original or inventive. Not many. This book is very pulled from a couple of very obvious sources.
Oh, yeah. No, there's nothing in here that's going to wow you.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a game that I would want to play. But there are a few things I might steal. I might set my next game in reboot universe where everyone is made out of bubbles and clearly made in Poser from 1994.
Totally.
Yeah. Maybe with a Bryce 3D background if I'm feeling spendy.
Ooh.
Yeah, but no dirt on anything because I don't understand how texture maps work. I mean, come on, guys. It's the 90s. All right. So there you go. That's the basics of Raven Star. Now let's do some cleanup stuff. First of all, we put out a brand new podcast a couple days ago, and I didn't really advertise it anywhere but Twitter, so let's talk about it, and then we'll advertise it some more in the next couple of days.
Yep, so we have started doing, you may have heard before, we've done some movie review things. We've decided, yeah, screw it, we're just going to actually do those now, as a regular-ish thing.
Neither of us have jobs, what else are we going to do? All right, so now we're also making Movie Mastery, which is our new podcast where we watch terrible movies entirely based on viewer recommendations.
Yep, if you've got something that you want to force us to watch because you listen to us and you hate us just so much,
all you can tell is that we're funnier when we're angry, and you're right, that's the right time to send us horrible movies. So far, we have watched Dead Heat, and that is available for your perusal on the website. We did not put it in the same RSS feed because we didn't want to bother people who, for whatever crazy reason, aren't interested in movie review podcasts.
Yeah, so if you are listening to this and that is something you would like to listen to, and you are subscribed to the System Mastery podcast, then you'll need to subscribe to the Movie Mastery podcast separately.
It's free, though, so just stop by the website, and the RSS feed is right there on the main page. So
yep.
Stop by and subscribe. We have a big list already. People have been sending them in, and here are the rules. You send us any movie you think we could watch. Hopefully it's not currently in theaters, and we can get it somehow fairly cheaply. Once we've established that, we add it to a big list, and then we randomly select one, as far as you know.
Yeah.
It's probably random.
Probably random.
Yeah, it's actually random. We randomly select one, and then we watch it that day. But the way we do it, because we like to break things down, is we watch the trailer first and then discuss our findings.
Yep. Discuss what we think will be included in the movie, what we expect to get out of it, and then we return to you with our findings.
Yep. And so we watched Dead Heat, which was real something, wasn't it?
That was certainly some Piscopo.
That was the most Piscopo I've ever seen.
Certainly.
And he's not even in like a third of the movie. There's a point where he just disappears. And
yeah, he's just like, all right, guys, bye.
I thought he just went upstairs like in the beginning of Happy Days. All right, so beyond that, we also have a whole new show that we're doing that's a bonus episode for folks who listen to regular System Mastery.
Yeah, you can find our Patreon on our front page at systemmasterypodcast.com.
Or just search for System Mastery at Patreon.
And if you are a donor at all, even at a $1 level, we have an entirely new set of bonus podcast features coming out. We've got...
we've won so far. The way that they work is that we're going to make characters in the books that we review, just to kind of put our money where our mouths are. So that means that today, right after we finish talking about this, we're going to make Ravenstar characters.
Yeah, if you want to see Captain Beef Dip come to life.
Yep, and whatever you end up making.
Yeah, we'll and my guy.
Your guy, something. We'll figure out something for you. Captain Beef Dip sang to me.
It sang the song of your people.
He looked up to me from the page and said, "Build me, and I will be yours."
And who could resist that with his belt all unbuckled and flopping out there?
I know, right? He is, he's just ready to rumble. I don't know if he wants to get dancing or get fighting.
It's a little of both.
What's the difference, right? Captain Beef Dip. Anyway, so each time we're going to make the characters that we describe during that the course of that episode. So you'll get to learn a little bit more about how the game engine works, and you'll get to hear us struggling to actually use these rules we generally just dump on.
Yep.
So there you go. So that makes, what, like 5 podcasts we're making? 7? 25 different new podcasts every month?
We are incapable of leaving this microphone.
No, we just live here now. This is what we are.
Yep, this is my life now.
Mouthpieces for this horrible complex. And, as an additional thing, I'd like to send out a quick thank you to at InfoCorn, or Jeff, our big listener Jeff. Not me. This isn't me. This is a different Jeff.
This is a different Big Jeff.
Big Jeff. Big Jeff is number 4. So that's stuck in my head because that's a Sesame Street song called, I think it's just called The Number 4, and the last line of it is, "Big Jeff is number 4. And I've just sang that since I was a little kid. And anyway, we wanted to thank Jeff at InfoCorn on Twitter for being nice enough to send us, I want to say, just a ridiculous treasure trove of books here.
Big ol' stack of shenanigans.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're thanks so much for all of this. It's a big gift. We hadn't seen a donation of books come in a while, but I know we have a few more coming. As always, if you'd like to send us books, you can do it through just contacting me on email, and I'll hook you up with a address to send these to. We just don't post it directly on the podcast because we are paranoid, weird little mouse people.
Yes. Well, not mouse people. I am a cartoon hot dog.
A cartoon hot dog, and I'm a 10-year-old girl.
Yes.
As has been established on multiple occasions. So again, Jeff, you sent us, God, like 6 books here, so thanks a bunch for this. This is awesome. We just wanted to send out a personal thank you. And otherwise, as always, if you want to find System Mastery, you can do that at systemmasterypodcast.com. You can find us on Gmail at System Mastery, Facebook at System Mastery, or on iTunes or Stitcher, where, as always, we'd really appreciate if you gave us some rates and reviews to help boost our numbers. We also have our Afterthought show, which will be out next week, where we answer questions from you, the listeners. So if you have questions, send them our way. We've already got some really good ones, but we can always use more.
Yeah, and ones that have nothing to do with RPGs. Just ask us dumb crap.
Yeah, just ask us the stupidest questions you can think of. I don't even care if they make sense from the beginning of the sentence to the end of the sentence.
Yeah, if you're just like, "Hey, I was camping recently, and I was wondering, when you're out in the woods, how far do you like to go to get a hot dog?"
That's perfect. That's a great question. I'd be thrilled to answer it. But not on a System Mastery episode. Only on an Afterthought.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have standards.
We have spoken. All right. So that's been Ravenstar. We want to thank everybody for listening and tune in on the Patreon today for our character building episode of Ravenstar and for Afterthought next week. Thanks and have a lovely week.